This is episode number 202 of Extraordinary Women Radio. Welcome to Extraordinary Women Radio. I am your host, Cami Gellner. Women are being called to lead with voice, vitality, and vigor. Each week, join me for wisdom-filled interviews with extraordinary women living out loud and making a difference in our world. Their stories will uplift, inspire, and spark your own purpose-driven journey. Hello, my extraordinary women friends. As we move into the time for gardens and greenery, it's the perfect time to introduce you to one of my extraordinary clients, Sherry Hess. Sherry's on a mission to create a movement around flavor. She is the founder of The Flavor Remedy and host of her show, Let's Talk Taste with Sherry, saving the earth one flavor at a time. Sherry believes that one taste bud at a time, we can save our health and the health of the planet. When we are aware of our bodies and the flavors we consume, we can eat with zero guilt and complete pleasure in a way that supports our bodies. Flavor is meant to be celebrated, appreciated, and understood as the most primal language we use to nourish our mind, body, and spirit. Yum, yum. I know you are going to love Sherry. Let's meet Sherry Hess. Well, welcome to Extraordinary Women Radio, Sherry. I am so excited to have you here today.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I love to bring my clients on to Extraordinary Women Radio. And I am particularly excited about bringing you on, my friend. You are a movement maker and you have a message that the world really needs to hear. It's a message that matters.
Thank you. Yeah, it feels really, really almost so important that it feels scary, you know, like it's...
Well, they say that, right? When we have our most important messages that we're supposed to be sharing with the world, those are the scariest messages to step into.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. It is. It's thrilling and it's exciting, and it feels like an honor to be able to kind of bring, you know, to bring a wisdom that can, you know, empower people and enlighten people and just give you a new way of thinking. We need new ways of thinking these days for sure. Yeah.
So. And that's what I love about your message is it is such original thought. I mean, there's nobody talking about the work that you're doing right now. And so when you're speaking, people always go, "What? Tell me more about this," because we want to know more. And I'm one of those. I mean, as you know, I've been on a food journey myself over the last, well, my whole life, I've been on a food journey.
Haven't we all?
Yeah. And when I think about, you know, even in this past year, your message was just always so important for me to be hearing it all the way along the way, because it's like, as you know, it's, you know, you look at all these different things, and we'll get into the salt and the salty and the sweet and all the different stories that we tell ourselves around food. And there's nobody talking about food in the way you are and talking about living flavors. And so I think that to me is one of those things that our world needs to hear. So let's just even start with that. Let's start with, what are living flavors?
Awesome. Yeah. So living flavors are basically life feeding life. The simplest way to think about living flavors are, it's a term that I've created to basically describe flavor that is backed with nutrition, right? Mm-hmm. Because we all know in this day and age that there are lots of different things that can affect our taste buds, right? That can affect the way things taste, the way we experience flavors. So there's artificial sweeteners and there's artificial flavors and there's natural flavors and there's all different ways that food has been created to stimulate or, you know, affect our taste buds. But those flavors don't necessarily have nutrition behind them. And our sense of taste is really our only God-given, you know, sense and power tool to help us detect nutrition. So living flavors are flavors that come from life, flavors that are grown, you know, in healthy soils, that are developed and grown and raised. And it's not just plants, it's animals being raised in environments where it is healthy for them. And these are the flavors that show up more powerfully, with more impact more antioxidants, you know, everything coming from life, coming from this concept of living soils, creating living flavor.
I like that. I love that. And how I always like to hear stories, right? Because I think this is what makes this so real for everyone when we're tuning into the podcast, is to hear these stories that helped you get to this concept. So how did you become an advocate for living flavors? How did the ideas even drop in for you? Tell us a little bit more about your personal journey and your personal story.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. It's, you know, it's a lifelong journey. You think back to every single thing that you've been through and the moment where you get to put the pieces together and go, oh, now I see, right? So, you know, my journey in general around food has been, you know, everything from culinary school. Shortly after culinary school, I got diagnosed with an autoimmune disease, had to limit my diet. And that was this interesting kind of phase of my life, because I'd just come out of culinary school with all this amazing knowledge and wisdom. And I was so excited. I had chosen a culinary school that was focused on local and organic. So they were very food focused, right? So the whole idea of, you know, growing things in the right soils, that was the choice and why I chose the culinary school that I went to. And then I got sick and I got diagnosed with this autoimmune and I had to eliminate things from my diet. And it felt like, I always use the analogy that I felt like an artist whose paints, like the primary colors, had been taken off of my palette. And I was still supposed to create art without the basics, right? And back then, now it's much more common. But like when I was told to eliminate gluten and dairy and all the things back then, it was like, oh my God, what am I going to eat, right? So that was part of the experience. And then, you know, a few years later, when I kind of stepped into entrepreneurship, I decided to create a spice company. And so I created a spice company with the idea that I was putting spice blends together. It was called Flavor, Legendary Spice, Flavor with Intention, which is, I don't do the spices anymore, so please don't look for Legendary Spice. But it was the idea of the flavor with intention is what kind of led me down this path. Because when I was being treated with the autoimmune disease by a healthcare practitioner, you know, I was changing my diet, but I was also giving all these supplements. And the supplements were full of ingredients that are on my spice cabinet, right? So it was turmeric and green tea and ashwagandha that I was drinking in teas. And I kept kind of telling myself, well, why aren't we just tasting these things?
Looking on the back of the jar and seeing that's what was in the in the supplement.
So cinnamon, you know, a lot of these common ingredients, and granted there was, you know, some Ayurvedic herbs that I had to learn a little bit more about and understand, but you know, I was recognizing that at the time, like so many people had kind of lost track of how to cook and how to make things taste good. And these are all flavor elements that you can put in your food, right? So that was part of the journey. And then I actually decided to contribute to a chapter in a women's anthology called Ready to Fly. And as I was writing that chapter, that was when it really hit me. Mm. Like, why do we have these taste buds anyway, right? Like, what in the world? Why are we just kind of walking through life, letting our taste buds be manipulated when they are there for a reason? And that was when I kind of had this big aha. I knew when I created the spice blends that there was something bigger, that there was a bigger message that was coming, going to come through. And it wasn't just about the spices themselves. So it was when I wrote that chapter that I was like, oh, we need to start talking about our sense of taste and this power, this tool that we have, right? And I just love it because it's a connection to our bodies as well, right?
Right. And our taste buds have been manipulated. They have been, they've been fooled for a long time. So talk to us a little bit about that, because I know what this means is when we start talking about living flavors, it's so different than the flavor that we think about when we look at the back of a cracker box or something, right? Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's interesting because if you look up the definition of flavor, the word food isn't even in the flavor in it. Like what it talks about is experiencing flavor it's an experience. It is a combination. It's actually a combination of our olfactory and our taste buds, right? So we use our sense of smell and our sense of taste to help distinguish things, right? Mm-hmm. But what has happened in the world of what flavor being manipulated, it's kind of twofold. It's this perfect storm of events. So, you know, we have all this knowledge around how to grow food differently these days, right? And if anyone is in the, you know, organic realm of think, you know, of eating and thinking and is aware of the toxins and the pesticides and the herbicides, and not only that, but also how our soils have been depleted. Right. So the beginning phases of what has kind of opened up the doors for this flavor manipulation actually comes from the fact that we started growing food for the purpose of things that are not nutrition and flavor. So
for more of the quantity
yield, exactly. Being able to ship it across the country, right? So if you're going to grow a tomato in California and you want it to land in the grocery stores in New Jersey, you better start growing a tomato that's going to, you know, ripen in the truck, be nice and hard and firm so that when it gets to New Jersey, it'll be still be, you know, not bruised and battered. So all these things, right? We're shipping food.
And you can get me going on tomatoes because I grew up in farm country, right? Yes. And I remember the farmer handing me a tomato and saying, "This tastes like sunshine." Yes. And it did.
Yes.
Right. I mean, that was such a, I mean, what you go buy in a grocery store today is not what I grew up eating as a kid.
Yeah. And that's a big part of it, right? So food is being grown without flavor because it's got all these other priorities that, you know, the agricultural, you know, the USDA and all of the seed companies and the big, you know, big ag companies are basically, you know, they create these things to be appealing, quote unquote, to the mm-hmm. farmer because they promise bigger yield. They promise, you know, more success, all the things, less pesticides, whatever, you know, whatever their latest, biggest and best thing is. But what's happening is our food has less flavor. Mm-hmm. So when you're teaching your kids to eat broccoli and they're eating it and there's no flavor to it and you're wondering, well, why don't they even like it, right? It doesn't even taste like broccoli anymore. Chicken doesn't taste like chicken anymore, right? So what that did then is open up this opportunity for all the food science, the processed food industry is like, oh, well, people don't, there's no flavor in this food. So now we have to create flavor. So what most people don't realize is in the creation of flavor and the manufacturing of flavor, it's really not having a major effect on our taste. That's not true. A lot of what the manufactured flavor is has nothing to do with our sense of taste and has everything to do with that combination of your olfactory and your taste buds. So it's really mostly affecting your smell. So there's a device called a gas chromatography device that recreates smells. So like when you're experiencing flavor in your mouth, there is a lot of it that is just coming from the smells. So because this gas chromatography technology can recreate smells, it has a huge effect on what the experience is when we're eating. So the perfect example of this is the jelly bean taste test. Have you ever heard about or done the jelly bean taste test?
I don't think so.
So the jelly bean taste test is, it gets marketed in all these really weird ways. People are like, and it's kind of this way that people want to prove that if you can't smell, then you can't taste. And they use these jelly beans as a way of kind of showing that.
Okay.
So if you go buy, you know, multi-flavored jelly beans.
Yep. I've done that before.
And you hold your nose and you eat the jelly bean, you won't. The idea is you can't technically distinguish from one jelly bean to the next.
Oh, interesting.
And that's because all of those flavors are olfactory triggered. So the only thing you experience on your actual taste buds is just the sweetness.
Mm.
So then people are like, oh, but you can't taste, you know, you can't really taste things if you don't have a sense of smell. But, you know, I have this good friend who's a congenital anosmic. She's never smelled her entire life and she will kick anyone's butt in a taste test contest because she can distinguish those five categories of flavor.
Oh, the real flavors she can taste.
Yep. So when you experience flavor itself, like those five categories, even if you have like, you know, limitations in your sense of smell, you can still pick up on those five categories. And that is where the nutrition is. That is the basis of what we can come to understand as better way of detecting nutrition when we're eating and really in touch with our bodies.
So let's talk about the five flavors. I think that's a great segue into that. Tell us what they are.
So the five flavors are salty, sweet, sour, bitter, and umami. And each one of those are, some people call them flavor experiences because the term flavor does technically, you know, involve your sense of smell and your sense of taste. So however you put it, I just use the word flavors because it's a simple way to kind of explain it to people. But each one of those categories has a purpose, you know, they have a purpose for our bodies. And the interesting thing about it is that because we're so disconnected from this wisdom, from this understanding that these flavors.
And these are living flavors. These are not manufactured flavors. These are living flavors that came from something living.
Right. So if it's got that nutrition behind it. So for example, umami, most people don't know what umami is unless they've seen it on like an Asian food menu. Sometimes, you know, it's starting to be trendy to have something called umami now. And it gets immediately associated with sushi or soy sauce or something like that, which those are actually legitimately umami flavors. But the interesting thing about umami flavor is that it was actually discovered as a flavor at the exact same time that they were recreating the manufactured version of it. So monosodium glutamate, MSG, which, you know, we... A lot of us our age know, remember MSG as being one of these big red flagged things, right? Like it used to be like, no MSG, used to be a big deal on your things and what you're looking for. And now there's so many other, no gluten, no dairy, no eggs, no soy, no nuts. Like there's so many other no's that no one's even paying attention to MSG anymore. Anyway, so monosodium glutamate is a chemical recreation of umami flavor, but what umami flavor is when it's living flavor, it is the presence of amino acids and proteins. Mm-hmm. So it's that meatiness, it's that savoriness, it's the meatiness that you not only find in meat and chicken and, you know, pork and things like that, but what the meatiness that you can detect in kale versus iceberg lettuce, right? Mm-hmm. So when there's real protein behind it, that flavor makes a difference. When it's just MSG, it's a recreation of that flavor and it leaves your body wanting more. And this is the whole concept behind, you know, these manufactured flavors is that even things like artificial sweeteners, the flavor sweetness, the sweetness flavor that we experience is actually the only flavor that can support us. It can actually, we can live off of. It's the only one that provides calories and gives us energy and strength, right? But if you talk about sweetness to someone who's trying to lose weight, they're like either guilt-ridden, not everyone, but you know, this is what happens is we have all this messaging that makes us feel guilty for eating something sweet or makes us feel like, you know, it's an indulgent or something that we have to have all these emotions around. And it's also the flavor that obviously processed food takes full advantage of us with.
Right. Keeps sucking us back in with the sugar, right?
Right. The whole, and that's a real thing, right?
Being it's a real thing for me for sure.
And addicted to the sugar. Yeah. And so the example of the sweetness then is that the living versus manufactured, even the, you know, just processed sugars in and of themselves, like sugar cane in its true form has an element of bitterness to it. Mm. So bitter flavors are actually flavors that are, it's the medicine. It's our detoxification. It's what helps our body process our other foods. It's what makes foods, you know, the nutrition available to us. Mm-hmm. Every antioxidant that we know is good for us likely tastes bitter, right? So the bitter is the medicine. And then sour is like digestive support. If you think about probiotics, like a good yogurt or a kimchi or fermented vegetables, all the things that we're told, you know, are good for our digestion, malic acid, the citric acid, or not citric acid that's created, that's a whole different thing. But like, you know, natural citric acid from oranges and lemons and grapefruits. And these are things that support our digestion and just help support with that whole nutrition thing. So every flavor that we experience on our sense of taste has a purpose behind it.
Right. Sure. So say them again, it's umami.
Umami.
Umami, I said it wrong. Yep.
Sour, salty, sweet, and bitter.
And bitter. So there's all of those different flavor profiles, if you will, categories, mm-hmm. are ones that exist in the living world. And so if we're mixing and matching with that, our body is happy with that.
Yes. And that's the whole point of a really good example of where you can see in nature, these flavors show up in a package deal. So sweetness doesn't show up in nature without something along with it. So if you think about an apple, right? Mm-hmm. An apple, we normally would think of an apple as being sweet, or, you know, Granny Smiths are obviously sour as well. Mm-hmm. But even just a regular apple that you would eat, you'd bite into it and you get that sweetness to be your first hit, and you would have a little sour in there too, right? Even the mm-hmm. sweetest apple has an element of sourness to it. But the key is it's wrapped in a bitter skin.
Right.
So if you think about the skin itself on an apple, if you imagine the whole purpose of skin in nature on an apple is to detoxify it, right? To protect it from insects, to protect it from disease. That's the bitter element. So the same job that it's doing for the apple is doing for you. And that bitter element, not only is it medicinal and detoxifying, but it also helps to create satiation in our bodies. So when you eat that sweet thing from nature, you're not just getting sugar and sweetness. You're getting the whole package to help your body break it down and process it and detoxify along the way. So, you know, that's where that living package is so different than what we're getting in a processed, sugary, sweet thing. Our bodies react completely different to it.
Right. And if we start making choices that are what we're putting on our plate is full of living flavors versus processed flavors, our bodies can become much more healthy.
Yes. And their bodies don't get confused by things like even artificial sweeteners, right?
Right.
Like artificial sweeteners are something that when they first came out, we thought, oh, this is the best. We don't have calories and we can still taste sweetness. Well, the whole point of sweetness is to tell your body that you have energy coming in, right? That you have this energy coming. So when it experiences sweetness and then it doesn't actually get the fuel that sweetness is supposed to be, it keeps craving more. And that happens with diet sodas as much as it does. You know, now there's a lot more information about the fact that artificial sweeteners are not, you know, all the glory that we right. thought they were when they came out. So,
right. And I know that, I mean, and I just go back to growing up in farm country, right? So I grew up in farm country and our plates were really full of living flavors on just because that's what we ate.
Yeah.
And when, you know, fast forward all these years and it's that change that has happened in our food chain in the way we receive food, and it just becomes, we've lost that back to the very basics of it. And this is where you're taking people is back to some very basics that, and bringing wonderful spices that are brought to, you know, that are grown from someplace.
Absolutely.
And versus, you know, as I've even gotten where I look at, you know, I look at spice labels, I look at tea labels because of you. And just even a few weeks ago, just for the audience, a few weeks ago, my husband, who's also a culinary trained chef, that's not his job today, but that's, he did go to culinary school. So he's always loved Sherry's work. And we're out for dinner and he's like looking at his plate and he's naming all the pieces and he just totally did it out of the blue. I mean, just he's naming all the different flavor categories on his plate.
That was so awesome.
And I was like, okay, wait a minute, you have to do that again. And I videoed him so I could send it to Sherry because it's, we think differently about it. And we know that our foods taste better if we're bringing all these different flavors to the table. Yes. And we're also much more cognizant that we're not bringing, it's the quality of the flavor that we're bringing in. So I love this.
Thank you. And I'm so honored that you sent me that video. That was so fun.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what we can make a big difference in, right? So what's great about that is that when you have all those flavors on your plate and you recognize that each one of those flavors coming from the right sources is supporting you, not only does it taste amazing, but you're like, oh my gosh, I'm also getting protein and I'm getting, you know, some antioxidants and some detoxification going on here. And I call it delicious environmentalism because it makes eating delicious food actually have an impact on how we're growing our food. And where I see that connection directly is in my guest that I'm interviewing on my show, right? Is that, so this guy came in, he's been in the compost industry for 30 years and he's creating these garden stocks that people can grow their own food anywhere. And he has USDA reports that compare his food grown in his garden stocks to the conventional way of growing food, and the fructose, the sucrose, the antioxidants, everything that is measured, you know, from a nutrient standpoint that I can easily look at and translate to a flavor standpoint was higher, right? So when you have, that's the big picture here. Like, this is my dream, is right, this connection from our taste buds to the soils.
Right.
Because if we can then, you know, really, really recognize that flavor does matter to our own bodies and our own health, then we can start prioritizing flavor coming from our farms instead of yield and, you know, all the other things. So
yeah, let's talk about that, because I know this part of what you want to put out into the world is around how this makes a difference for our world, for our earth.
Absolutely.
So tell us more about that.
Yeah. So that's the big connection. And, you know, in the show that I do, you know, Sherry, Let's Talk Taste with Sherry, Saving the Earth One Flavor at a Time is my tagline, right? When I first started coming up with this concept and this idea, I knew that the big picture here was that if we could demand flavor, if we could see the correlation between delicious food on our taste buds, that deliciousness translating directly to nutrients, which translates directly to food grown properly, this is where the delicious environmentalism comes in, right? It's like, all we have to do is eat delicious food and we'll save the planet. Like, how simple is that?
You're pulling out all the pesticides and all those sorts of things.
Yeah. And that's the part too, right? And so what's been fascinating for me too, is that, you know, I recognize where we are, and it's not easy to get to where I think we need to be, right? It's a big deal to, if we're going to change all the agriculture across the country, across the world, right? But the truth is that there's pockets of people that are doing it.
We get to choose.
Yep. And you might have to seek it out, or you might have to just grow your own herbs. Like, it's really not hard to grow your own herbs, and people are making lots of really great ways of, you know, there's counter windowsill gardens. There's more and more information about how to like turn your own soils into healthy soils and composting. And like, people are taking the steps. So that's always been the big goal, is that, you know, we are like these little micro earths walking around. Human beings are just little versions of the big planet.
Because I love
what's happening to our soil, right? Like, if we keep putting pesticides and herbicides and keep killing the life of our soil, and the soil can no longer have a healthy immune system. The soil has leaky gut, right? Like, there's like correlations between what's happening in the lack of biodiversity in our soil and the lack of biodiversity in our bodies. Mm. So we're just this little reflection of what's happening in the soil. Right. And I see our taste buds as this pathway. Like, if we can just really, you know, prioritize flavor equaling nutrition, and if we stop letting this manufactured flavor be what we keep eating, it's going to demand changes. It's going to require that we treat the earth differently.
I love that. I so love that. And when we think about, you know, coming to this mini earth that we are as a people, right? And we have been fed all the diet culture stories for, you know, our whole lives. We've heard, you know, one thing to another.
Yeah.
And I think what I love about this is throwing out a lot of the rhetoric that comes with diet culture.
Yes.
And going back to some very core foundations. So talk to us a little bit about your beliefs and how this shifts out.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. I do see it as this way of kind of, you know, clearing confusion around the diet culture too, is because, you know, we're not really allowed to trust our bodies. First of all, it takes a big step to step into this place where we can be like, oh, I totally trust my body. It's telling me the right thing. I can eat something that tastes good and it's good for me. Like, that doesn't even feel like conceptually that it's something that we can adopt into our lives, right? It doesn't even feel real, because we're so far away from that because of this outside wisdom or knowledge, I should say, of the diet culture. And we've been ingrained for so long in being told, you know, I mean, we've been through no fat, no, you know, low fat, protein, vegan, paleo, keto, right? Like, who knows what to believe anymore? And these conversations, everybody's like, what's going on? So I see this movement as being something that we can trust our bodies again. And there's a little bit of knowledge we have to take in, right? We have to understand this idea that there's nutrition behind flavor. And when there's nutrition behind flavor, and we get to like experience that in our bodies, our cravings change, right?
Totally.
And our bodies, our smart, wise bodies, we can then like link arms with cravings instead of resisting cravings, right? Like the diet culture teaches us everything about how to resist something that you want. And that has everything to do with the fact that you're eating flavors that don't have nutrition, right?
Right.
When you're eating donuts and cookies and sugar, you're told to resist sweets. Well, if you're eating apples and oranges and grapes, you're going to feel satisfied quicker, and you're not going to have that same, you know, addiction to sugar that's there.
Your body becomes satisfied much faster. And that was something I certainly experienced in this past year when I was choosing very nutritious, rich foods.
Yeah.
Then my body was like, oh, okay, this, yeah, it's happy that way.
And so, you had to have, so this is the other part of it too, is that it's really important that it tastes good.
Right.
Right. So like when you're bringing, I always say, like, you know, people will have these stories about, oh, I was so successful in keto, or I was so successful in this or that, or whatever it was, right? It might even be something that incorporated a shake. I'm like, well, you know what? No matter what you chose as a diet protocol, right? You likely incorporated more bitter into your diet. You know, whether you knew it or not, because sometimes that gets hidden in a shake with, you know, flavoring on it or whatever. But the elements of what's bitter, that detoxification, you know, so in a whole foods diet, that means you're eating more vegetables, you're eating more greens, you're eating more of those things. But if you just decide you need to go eat greens, and I always say that, like, you don't need to just eat a big bowl of arugula without anything else on it, just because you know it's bitter. Because it's not just the bitter, it's everything included with it, right? So I think what you did on your journey was you had some really good recipes, right? You had some good support in having things that were very balanced in flavor.
Right.
And when it tastes good, you keep choosing it. That's the other thing, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. That definitely happened. Because I know you said that, you know, long ago you had an autoimmune disease, and you know, this whole shift for yourself, how's your own health shifted and changed?
Yeah. You know, it's been fascinating because, well, ever since the autoimmune, I mean, I've been gluten-free. Fortunately, that's the only thing I've had to completely avoid is gluten. So I'm not, you know, but it introduces this new awareness to your diet, right? When you really kind of pay attention to what is going on. But I feel very blessed because, you know, in that kind of throes of being diagnosed with autoimmune and being told to, you know, change your diet. I was very fortunate in that I was kind of given good guidance very early on. So I'm about 10 years diagnosed with thyroid autoimmune, and I have yet to have to go on thyroid hormones. So I call that a huge win.
Totally.
I feel like, yeah. And, you know, staying on this path of, you know, organic as much as I can. And, you know, to be honest with you, organic is another word that, you know, it's a government USDA word, and it's definitely a good, touchstone for making a choice for less pesticides. Right. And,
right.
But I think sometimes it gets put on a pedestal that we think it's like the ultimate way to grow things too. And there's all these farmers and all these pockets of wisdom and indigenous wisdom and people that are doing so much more healthy things with our soils, even beyond organic. So that's why I say there's a lot of hope out there. So my health, I feel very fortunate that, you know, between really choosing to eat, you know, the least amount of pesticides that I can, and, you know, tuning into like being able to have more fun with my food, right?
Right.
has really,
and I love that, right? It's having fun with your food versus feeling like I can't have that, I can't have that, and I can't have that.
Right.
And really finding, if you're playing in the flavors, that opens up, it's much more expansive for you.
Yes. So it opens up opportunities to eat food that you don't think that you like, because when you combine flavors, then that the offensiveness of something bitter can be balanced, right? So it does open up an opportunity for that. And it also, it makes you realize that it's more interesting. There are more interesting flavors out there than just salty and sweet.
Right.
And your taste buds can really embrace that.
Right. And when you start shifting up, I know that when I started shifting up, I taste like something that's processed sugary or processed with a whole lot of salt. And it's like, it doesn't even taste good to me anymore. I'm like, I don't want that. It's like, I so much more gravitate towards that much more nutritious foods. And it's satisfying.
Yes. And this is part of it too, is that, you know, again, just like a craving, you learn to like things. When you introduce your body to more things, you learn to like more things, and you learn to lean into things that support your body and that your taste buds adjust, you know, like our taste buds adjust all the time to what we're giving it.
Yeah.
You hear that all the time with people that, like, if they've been eating a lot of sweets and a lot of processed sugars, and then all of a sudden they go on a diet and they, you know, force themselves to stop eating sugar and they go through all this and then reintroduce something that has a little bit of sweetness in their diet down the road. And they're like, oh my gosh. Right. Yeah. Same thing with salt. Like, our taste buds kind of get numbed out. And I believe that has a lot to do with the flavor without the nutrition behind it.
Right.
Right. Cause if you're eating sugar that doesn't have the bitter with it, that's supposed to come with sugar, with a sweetness in nature, then your body's going to be like, well, where's the bitter? I need more. Right. I need more. I need more. I need more. So I think there's a lot of wisdom in this, this concept of living flavors and flavor backed with real nutrition that can show up just in our own cravings and how our taste buds actually, you know, teach us what tastes good and what doesn't taste good as well.
Well, I tell you, Sherry, it's been so much fun seeing the evolution of your message, of your purpose, of your, what you're putting out into the world. And I know, you know, just this whole becoming visible in this message that is yours, that's no one else has been talking about. How's that working for you? I mean, how has that journey been? I guess I know it's working good for you now, but I've seen the getting here. So
yeah,
because I think it's interesting for our listeners to know that we don't go out and create big change in the world without going through our own stuff.
No. It has been crazy. And you know, when I first met you and when we first started working together, it was really focused on the spices. I was still doing those spice blends.
But you kept saying, I don't want to do these. There's something more.
Right, right. And, you know, part of that is food manufacturing is just really, really hard in and of itself. And I was wanting really good sources and it wasn't easy to get consistent sourcing. So manufacturing food, like, I bow to people in the food industry because it is a brutal industry. And a lot of it actually has to do with this, what I'm talking about too, is these flavors, right? These manufactured flavors. Everyone thinks they have to put manufactured flavors for consistency and for so many reasons, but because of lack of flavor in real food. But the journey for me, I think back to when we first started working together, and I thought back then that this message, this idea, this concept was something that would work in conjunction with the diet culture. I really thought that was what it was going to be. I thought it was going to be something that I would be side by side with nutritionists or dietitians or, you know, the people that are already trying to help people to eat better and be healthier, right?
And you did a bit of that with OncoBites.
I did.
Which was describe what OncoBites is so that I can.
Yep. And OncoBites are just small nutrition dense, easy to eat bites of food that are for cancer patients.
Yeah. So you helped consult from that perspective of helping.
I'm part owner in the company. And so I developed the recipes for them.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about them is that they are they put flavor sensitivities right on the packet. So anyone who knows anyone who's gone through cancer, through chemotherapy, and has that taste, you know, your taste buds changing during treatments, these bites are geared to give them real nutrition with real food, unlike a lot of the liquid drinks out there, that will support them, you know, specifically for their days following chemotherapy. So yeah, that was part of it. But I also thought like I would be able to have these kind of lessons and these new terminology to give nutritionists that are working with their clients. Like, you know, this is how you can approach your sweet cravings, and, or this is how you can, you know, bring more greens into your diet or whatever. And what I learned in experiencing that, so I reached out and I worked with nutritionists, and they, you know, I walked them through this program that I was developing. They were overwhelmed and they loved it and they loved the concept, but it was so like different because they're used to talking about carbs and proteins and fats and and they know flavor is important, but it really was very evident that this is its own thing. You can't tag team it with the already existing diet culture because it makes no sense next to the existing diet culture, right? So I think that was probably one of my biggest learning curves. Yeah. But what was cool about it was that these nutritionists were intrigued by it and they loved the message. But from the way they were training and teaching and helping their clients, it became like almost like a whole nother textbook to add on top of it.
And so this really became a whole new category of conversation, a whole new movement in the way the way that people even looked at their food. And it didn't fit with anything that was existing out there.
Yeah.
And as it has been so much fun seeing this message come to fruition for you. Yeah. You know, for example, I know you just landed an audition on a TEDx talk coming up later this month. After applying and going through the application process, you're one of a small number of people auditioning out of all those applications. So that's super exciting. I've seen your story take shape on the stage. I've seen, you know, we just had the Wild Woman Writing Retreat where your book is formulating. And so this is this whole new movement that's coming forth. And it's like giving me goosebumps that I'm so excited for it to come out. Right. And it's, so this new space of you giving voice, finding and being visible, you've got your podcast, you've got your YouTube channel. It's like this all coming, this voice of Living Flavors is really coming out into the world and people are excited to hear it every time they hear it.
Yeah. Thank you. It is exciting. And gosh, when you put it like that, I'm like, oh my God, I do have a lot going on.
Well, and you just look at it and look at the timeline, right? I mean, I think that what's really important for all of our listeners to know is that this takes time.
It did take time.
And it's like the ideas start to drop in and the clarity takes shape and then more clarity comes. And that's the importance of this journey, that whenever we're taking something out into the world to make a difference with it.
Yeah.
What we're being called to do, how we are impact makers being called to make a difference in our world. It's not like you just pull a lever and it happens.
No. And it's fascinating too, because like I said, in the beginning, I really thought this was going to be something that would kind of, you know, tag team with what exists already. But when I kept going and kept going, it's like, no, this is its own thing.
Right.
And that makes it scary.
Right.
You know, and it makes you want to hide in a hole every once in a while. but then you get an email that says, congratulations, you got accepted to audition for a TED Talk. And you're like, all righty then, I guess I'll keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it is. And it's been great. And I so appreciate, you know, your support and, you know, everything that your community has brought and all of the events that you do. You know, I look back and between Soul Speaks and the writing retreat, I mean, there's so many things that just allow, I can probably point to moments of huge ahas, right? That came in the equine vision days, and everything is just, it's powerful stuff that you provide to us.
Well, and this is part of my joy is that I actually, I love it when I'm bringing the information and the wisdom that my clients are putting out into the world back in to make my life better. So, and you know, that this has become language that Tim and I do around a dinner table, right?
So love that.
Yeah. And then that's, you know, so that's when I know I love working with change makers that are really carrying messages that you know, impact my life, that impact others' lives around them. So that's what I see in you, Sherry. And I see that. And I so honor that.
Thank you. I'm going to have to figure out how to like come up with a, you know, dinner table conversation. How do we conversations going around where do you find umami? Where do you detect salt? You know,
exactly.
That'd be cool.
Dinner totally table would conversations. Be. Exactly. Little cards. Okay. Which one is the right. Umami?
Inspired by Tim.
Exactly. Exactly. So okay. Cool. So where can people learn more about the work that you're putting out into the world? Tell us about that.
Yes, thank you. So the best place to go actually is my YouTube channel. It's The Flavor Remedy on YouTube. You know, it's been so much fun to do it. And my guests, I swear, every single time I have a guest on the show, I'm always like, oh my God, you just justified my total existence, because no one's, like you said, no one's having this conversation, right? So then we start talking and, you know, I've got spice guys that are traveling the world. I've got gardeners, I've got chefs, I've got all these people, and there's all these different fields that can look at this concept and see it as a way, you know, to elevate. So Flavor Remedy on YouTube. There's also, I mean, my website is theflavorremedy.com. I'm on Facebook, also a Flavor Remedy business page. I have a private group called the Salty, the Sweet, the Sour, and the Savvy that people can join. And that's where I kind of, you know, spend a little time giving a little bit more personalized information, and also on Instagram and LinkedIn.
So. Awesome. Awesome. And we'll put those links on the show notes for this. So that'll Perfect. Be awesome.
Thank
so the final question we always close with are, what three pearls of wisdom would you like to leave with our audience?
Okay. For one, sweet never comes alone in nature. Absolutely, positively. Remember that one, because it's so much better as a whole package. Your body knows, you know, this, the idea that we have our sense of taste, it's there to be a nutrition detector. So let it be the nutrition detector. And I guess the last thing is, you know, if you're not already doing it, read labels and understand what you're putting in your body. You know, you can hear that a gazillion times in your life and you still go and grab, you know, the gluten-free crackers because they taste good.
Right.
And it's not to shame you around that, but, you know, just have an understanding of where the flavor is coming from. If you're tasting umami and there's no protein in it, pretty sure there's some MSG buried in there somewhere. So,
yeah. Awesome. So Sherry, I'm so proud of you and everything you're
thank
doing.
You.
And thank you for joining me and sharing this with my listeners. I know they're going to love you.
Yay.
And thank you so much.
Thank you, Cammie.
I hope you liked this episode of Extraordinary Women Radio. If you did, please share this podcast with your own special tribe of women and help spread the love, the dreams, and the inspiration. Are you ready to raise up your voice, your visibility, and your business? I invite you to join the conversation in my Facebook group, Extraordinary Women Connect. This group brings together changemaker women entrepreneurs who want to elevate their business or impact. It is a place for powerful connections and collaborations. It is a place to be inspired, uplifted, and fired up for action. To learn more about my work that helps women entrepreneurs make heartfelt connections to mindful growth strategies, visit my website at cammiegelner.com. Till next time, my friend. Listen to your heart, follow your dreams, and be you.